Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's Who Is Accuracy Reporting System webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, GDD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on whois.icann.org. The running time of the webinar is 60 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Questions to Presenters pod in Adobe Connect. Dial-in numbers can be found in the Notes pod here in Adobe Connect. The conference passcode is GDD. To enter the phone queue, dial star 1. To exit the queue, dial star 2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Russ Weinstein, Director, GDD Operations.
Thank you, Nicole. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to the ICANN community. This is Russ Weinstein, and we're here to talk about the Phase 1 results of the Who Is Accuracy Reporting System, or the ARS. With me today, several folks from the ICANN team, as well as from the NORC at the University of Chicago team. So with me to speak today will be Jared Irwin from the operations team, Owen Smigelski from the contractual compliance team, Stephen Pedlow from the NORC, and Ed Mulrow from the NORC. So the agenda for today is I'll start off and give us some background about the Who Is Accuracy Reporting System. And why we're doing this. Jared will talk through the project plan and the timeline and how we do the work. Stephen will talk about the sample design and how we set up the study. Ed will take us through the results and findings of the study. Owen will have a chance to talk about the next steps for the compliance process as part of this project. And then we'll close with a look forward to the next phase of the project and open it up for questions and answers. Hoping to have the content run between about 30 minutes or so, given about 30 minutes for Q&A. So the background of the Who Is Accuracy Reporting System, what we're trying to accomplish here comes from some board action back in 2012 that I'll get to on the next slide. But the concept is that we're going to proactively assess contact data and GTLD who is records using somewhat automated tools, produce reports like we've done of accuracy for the community, and then provide the results of those studies to the compliance team to work with registrars to correct records as needed. That's kind of Who Is ARS in a nutshell. Where this comes from, as I mentioned, back in June of 2012, the Who Is review team, working as part of the Affirmation of Commitments reviews, produced a report with a series of recommendations for improvements to the ICANN Who Is policy and implementation. In November of 2012, the ICANN board approved a number of those recommendations, one of them essentially creating or directing the staff to create this accuracy reporting system. Skipping forward in time a little bit, working with the community in 2014, the 2013 RAA Who Is Accuracy specification became effective for those 2013 RAA registrars. Working with the community over the course of spring of 2014, a draft implementation plan for the accuracy reporting system was put out for public comment, and a public comment report was produced, helping us define how we were going to approach the putting together of an accuracy reporting system. In May, we put out an RFP and solicited feedback, so those March and May bubbles kind of represent some feasibility analysis as well as then a pilot study was conducted with the help of the NORC and some of the other vendors on this project from the April to December timeframe. So those last three bubbles were kind of the feasibility assessments ICANN did before putting this into implementation, which is where we are now. So on the slide here, you see the implementation plan. As I mentioned, the pilot was conducted from from August to December of last year, and then a public comment period was put out. We used that pilot as a proof of concept for the plan, and overall it was successful, and we figured out a lot of questions that we had about implementing the project. Solicited public comment and use that to help us kind of finalize the implementation plan that you see before you. These phases stem from the SAC 058 report that defined different types of validation that can be done with WHOIS contact data. The phase one that we're reporting on today covers the syntax validation, or how the contact information is formatted in a WHOIS record. Phase two, which we'll get into at the end of the presentation, we'll start the operational validation, so not only doing the syntax, but also checking things like, does an email go through, does a phone ring, would the mail get delivered? And so, as I mentioned, we'll talk about that at the end, but we're working towards a first report on operational validation in December, and then doing these every 6 months. So you'll see the next report in June and theoretically then in December and June thereafter. And then that third phase is identified in the SAC 058 as kind of the third level of validation that could take place, identity validation. At this time, we're still working on doing some internal feasibility analysis and then want to have further consultation with the community about if we're going to pursue that, and if so, how would we go do that? So not a big update there at this time, but more to come on that probably in the future. As I mentioned, the pilot served as a proof of concept and was successful from that standpoint, but we did learn quite a bit from the pilot, both from our operational experience, the vendor's experience of doing the work, as well as the feedback we received from the community, which was very helpful. The two things I would highlight most of our learnings from the pilot were we needed to improve our criteria and think about reporting up front and how that reporting needs to be so that you design that in to the way you conduct the project. On a criteria perspective, the public comments were heavily in favor of aligning accurate to the requirements of the registrar accreditation agreements. Along with that, what I mean by respect effective dates as a second bullet there is there's different RAA versions, and then there's, as I mentioned in the beginning, in January 2014, the WHOIS accuracy specification of the 2013 RAA became effective back in January 2014, but registrars had been signing up new registrants on the 2013 RAA prior to the effective date of that that specification. So we have what's called a grandfathered record, and you'll see more information about that later in the report. And then the third element on criteria was in the pilot, we only tested one of the contacts, typically the registrant contact information, but in this phase we are testing not only the registrant's information, but the technical and administrative contacts in a record. And then down in the reporting area, statistical significance refers to we only want to produce estimates where we have statistically significant samples and are able to produce estimates with a 95% confidence interval so that we're providing high-quality estimates back to the community. In the reasons for inaccuracy, we design the criteria and the testing in such a way that we not only can tell you how many are inaccurate, but what are the leading causes of those inaccuracies, which help inform the community and help it create actionable data, which is that last bullet, both for the community itself and for ICANN's compliance team, so that when they go back to the registrar, there's less research that has to be redone, essentially. So it facilitates that process as well. Now I'll pass it off to Jared Irwin to talk through the process and timeline of the project.
Thanks, Russ. So, now I'll talk a little bit about the WHOIS ARS team and the timeline and tasks involved with the Phase 1 study. On this next slide, you can see the various players of this cross-functional and cross-organizational team. On the ICANN side, we had several different departments contributing to the report in various ways, such as criteria development, data collection, or communicating with registrars to gain their feedback on things like the criteria. On the vendor side, we had the NORC, who are here with us today. They helped us with the study design, sampling, and data analysis and report writing. WBSI was our data parser. DigiCert handled the email and telephone accuracy testing. And the UPU, the Universal Postal Union out of Bern, Switzerland, they conducted the postal address accuracy testing. The next slide shows some of the tasks that the WHOIS ARS team has been completing over the past several months. As you saw in the previous slide, the pilot study ended in late 2014 with a public comment report coming out in March 2015. And it was around this time that we started working on Phase 1, looking at lessons learned from the pilot study, organizing the vendors, and starting to look at the criteria with a goal of getting data collection kicked off in the mid-April timeframe. And that time allotted for the accuracy criteria refinement was to ensure, as Russ talked about, that the criteria mapped to the RAA, as well as to ensure that the vendors had plenty of time to calibrate their testing tools to the criteria. And so accuracy testing took up most of June, followed by data analysis and report writing in July and August, and as you know, leading to publication just a couple days ago on the 24th. And with that, I'll turn it over to Stephen Pedlow from the NORC, who will discuss sample design.
Thank you, Jared. My name is Stephen Pedlow of NORC at the University of Chicago, and I have designed the samples for the WHOIS ARS projects. This first slide is a reference slide on the sampling for Phase 1. The top row refers to the entire GTLD space of 157 million domains, and the WHOIS ARS sample is representative of all of them. We drew our initial sample of 100,000 domains by GTLD. At the far right, in red, this top row shows that only 3% of domains are in the new GTLDs. However, we want a sufficient representation of the new GTLDs, so we actually constructed our sample so that 25,000 out of the 100,000 in the initial sample are selected from the new GTLDs. You can see this 25% new, 75% prior split in the middle row, which shows the distribution of the initial sample by region and RAA status. Almost half have North American registrants, and very few registrants are from Africa. Very few domains are with registrars still operating under the 2009 RAA. As covered earlier, many of the domains with registrars operating under the 2013 RAA need to be grandfathered to 2009 RAA standards in our analysis work. In our initial sample, grandfathered and non-grandfathered are roughly equal size, but as shown in the top row, we estimate that there are twice as many grandfathered domains in the entire GTLD space. The selection of more domains from the new GTLDs, which have fewer grandfathered domains, is the reason grandfathered and non-grandfathered are equal in our initial sample. The bottom row shows the distributions for the 10,000 subsampled that was analyzed for the report released Monday. In order to maximize our ability to make estimates for regions, the RAA subgroups, as well as new and prior GTLDs, our analyzed subsample contained more African and Latin American Caribbean domains and more 2009 RAA domains. You can see this by comparing 0.07 for Africa in the 100,000 sample to 7% in the 10,000 sample. Also, 3% versus 18% for Latin America Caribbean, and 3% versus 18% for 2009 RAA. This slide summarizes the analyses that were done for the 10,000 analyzed domains. We looked at three contact types: registrant, technical, and administrative. We looked at three contact modes for each: email address, telephone number, and postal address. This means that 9 contact fields in total were analyzed. The full criteria are listed in Appendix A of the report, but some example syntax tests carried out are: does the email address contain the at symbol? Does the telephone number have a country code? And does the postal code, the postal address include an identifiable country? We also have to take account of the RAA type in our analysis. Domains with registrars under the 2009 RAA and the grandfathered domains can only be held accountable to 2009 RAA requirements. Only the non-grandfathered domains can be held accountable to the 2013 RAA requirements. This slide shows what is in the report. We provide accuracy rates for the entire GTLD space, by region, and in total. We compare new GTLDs to prior GTLDs, and we also compare the three RAA groups. The report gives point estimates in a 95% confidence interval expressed as a point estimate plus or minus a margin of error amount. All of the sample sizes allow these main groups to have margin of errors less than plus or minus 5%. We also attempted to get as many of the cross section groups on two variables to be this accurate. The report also describes why the records were found to be inaccurate. This is through a detailed set of tests that were carried out and recorded to help determine accuracy. For consistency, all domains were primarily evaluated against the 2009 RAA requirements. Appendix C of the report applies the 2013 RAA requirements to the non-grandfathered domains. For the results, I now turn it over to my NORC colleague, Ed Mulrow.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm now going to run through just a few of the results. The report published last Monday contains much more than we'll be showing now. Oops. But some overall comments before we look at findings in particular are that the accuracy for registrant, administrative, and technical are very similar. Another thing to point out is that the email accuracy is very high, while the postal address was the lowest of the three modes. Basically, if an email address is provided, it passed all the tests. Two-thirds of telephone number errors are due to the wrong number of digits. And for postal address errors, it's typically missing one or more required fields. Overall, 70.3% of domains meet all 2009 RAA syntax requirements. Even those that are under the 2013 RAA, we went and evaluated them based on the 2009 to set a good baseline across all domains. So the following are the estimates applicable to the entire GTLD space or respective subgroups. First, we'll look at things based on the mode, the contact mode, email address, telephone number, and postal address. Also in this slide, you can see that we have the overall accuracy across all domains in the entire GTLD space, which previously said was 70.3%. That's a reference that you can see the judge performance of the other modes against that. One thing to remember here is that as Stephen went through with the way we sampled, the end results have been corrected so that this is representative of the entire GTLD space. We see that, as previously mentioned, email address accuracy rates are very high. So only those WHOIS records that did not have an administrative or technical email address in the record would have been an error. Telephone numbers were significantly lower than the email addresses. The postal addresses were slightly lower than the telephone numbers. In looking at these, each of these bars for the contact mode accuracy, that's judged on all three contact types, so the registrant, administrative, and technical contacts. In order to be accurate for email address, each of those three contact modes had to be accurate, similarly for telephone and postal address. When we look at the overall domain accuracy, it's not only the three contact modes, but also the three contact types. Let's move on to take a different look at this across the RAA type. Once again, we're judging all of these against the 2009 RAA requirements. Here we see that within the entire GTLD space, we estimate that the 2009 those domains, when registered under the 2009 RAA, have about an 83% accuracy rate, whereas those under the 2013 RAA, whether they are grandfathered or non-grandfathered, the percentage drops to about 70%, which is the same or very similar to the overall domain accuracy. And one of the reasons for that is, as we started out, the vast majority of domains in the entire GTLD space are registered through registrars who are on the 2013 RAA agreement. Looking at this by region of the world, we see that North America has about an 84% accuracy rate. This is across all three contact modes and all three contact types. The Africa region is the lowest, and the others are in various states in between the two. Now we just want to show a few things for the reasons for the errors. As we mentioned before, for email, it's a very high accuracy rate, and the only reason for failure there would be if an email was not present in the technical or admin contact. When we go and look at the telephone errors, we see that for all three contact modes, it's over 60% of the time that the telephone number was an incorrect length. And for registrants, that went up to above 70%. The other types of errors that you see there, the country code missing, a number not present, and unallowed characters are relatively small compared to the incorrect length, although the country code missing tends to happen over 20% of the time. When we look at postal address, there is not necessarily one dominant reason why there are postal address errors. At a third of the time, state or province was not present in the address. Another factor, city not present, was in about 25% of the addresses. And postal code not present or bad format happened about 21% of the time. So those are our highlighted findings. As I mentioned before, the report published earlier this week contains more information. With that, we'll turn it over to Owen to talk about contractual compliance follow-up.
Thank you. This is Owen Smigelski for the record. So the potentially inaccurate records have been provided to compliance, and those are now under review, just confirming data and results. And what a large part of that is for us to do is to check to see whether these are valid under compliance process and ICANN procedures, but then also to get an understanding of how many of these tickets would be processed as who is an accuracy complaint versus a who is format complaint. A who is format complaint would be such as where a country code is missing, like a plus one for the United States. Doesn't necessarily render that contact information inaccurate. It just needs to conform to the 2013 RAA format, and that wouldn't necessarily be something that would fall under a registrar that was under the 2009 RAA, because that's not necessarily a requirement for that. So all of these complaints will be reviewed in advance of going into the complaint processing system. In addition, the number of records that are identified as potentially inaccurate may exceed the 30% of the 10,000 subsample due to weighting. All of these will be put into compliance's complaint processing system and processed alongside other who is inaccuracy and who is format complaints. As the 2009 and the 2013 RAA requires, registrars must investigate and take steps to correct inaccurate who is data, and failure to respond or demonstrate compliance during the process of the complaint can result in a notice of breach. As with other who is complaints, who is inaccuracy complaints that are submitted by the ICANN community, compliance does take efforts to ensure that it is an inaccuracy and not merely a format issue. And to the extent that complaints can be processed as a who is format, we'll make every effort to do so. In addition to that, if there are possibilities to bundle complaints to registrars, which can sometimes be done with the who is format, such as a number of records that need to have a plus one country code added, we'll do that, and we'll coordinate with the registrars to do so. And want to stress that ICANN will continue to give priority to complaints that are submitted by the community rather than the who is ARS complaints, and registrars are encouraged to have a dialogue with compliance if there are concerns about the amount of tickets that they are receiving. In addition, one of the things we learned from the pilot is we can't just put all of the tickets into our complaint processing system at once due to system overload issues. So those will be phased in over time as well, too, which will reduce the impact on compliance as well as registrars.
Okay. Thank you, Owen. So now we'll just wrap it up by talking about phase two briefly. We just wanted to mention where we are with it and what's ahead. So as a reminder, phase two will include both syntax and operability or operational testing. So this will include questions like, does the email go through, not get bounced back? Does the phone number ring when dialed? Do the components of the address lead to deliverability? And also, as a reminder, phase two will be conducted in six-month cycles. So right now we're talking about phase two, cycle one. And this has already started. We've already actually begun work on phase two, cycle one. We started with data collection in the mid-June timeframe, and that overlaps with phase one so that we can meet the deadline of report publication in December, needing a little extra time because of that combined syntax and operability testing. Right now we are actually at the point of starting accuracy testing and actively working to define the criteria and proper tests for the operability criteria. And again, we're targeting report publication in early December. And with that, we come to the end. So just to summarize, phase one looked at a focus on syntax accuracy, and the report was published on the Knowledge Center of whois.icann.org on Monday, the 24th. We used a subsample of 10,000 records from a larger initial sample of 100,000 records to conduct our study. We accounted for subgroups such as ICANN region, RAA type 2009-2013, as well as new versus prior GTLDs. We found that there was about a 70% accuracy rate for domains on all 2009 requirements. And with those results, ICANN contractual compliance will be conducting follow-up on potentially inaccurate records. And subsequent to that follow-up, we will be soliciting community feedback in the fourth quarter of this year. And finally, as I just mentioned, we are actively working on phase two. It's underway with the first report, cycle one report, coming out later this year. And with that, we can move to questions and answers. And actually, I think I have the first.
Thanks, Jared. With that, we'll move on to the question and answer portion of this webinar. Our first question comes from Constantine Kopadopoulos. Can you please explain the difference between contact mode and contact type?
Yes, thanks, Constantine. I'll answer that for you. Contact mode is the email address, telephone number, and postal address, so how someone is reached, the mode of reaching someone. And contact type is the registrant, administrative, and technical contact roles, persons. And we're actually looking to perhaps change that term in the future to clarify.
The next question comes from Greg DiBiase. Does compliance believe that country codes are required for telephone numbers under the 2009 RAA?
This is Owen. If the country code, as I mentioned in the chat, if the missing country code renders a number non-contactable, for example, adding plus one to a registrant based in the United States, then it would be inaccurate under any RAA. However, most of these kind of complaints under the 2013 RAA would be a WHOIS format as opposed to a WHOIS inaccuracy complaint. This would be on a case-by-case basis.
The next question comes from Philip Shepard. In broad terms, can we say of the 157 million TLDs, 30% have inaccurate WHOIS, i.e., 47 million?
Yes, we estimate that 30% of domains in the GTLD space, approximately 47 million domains, have one or more syntax test failures in any of the 9 contact fields examined.
The next question is from Theo Gertz. Regarding email testing, was it tested if the TLD did exist?
Hi, this is Russ. Thank you, Theo. Yes, we test when we were checking the email addresses, we did validate that the TLD was a valid or delegated TLD.
At this time, we don't have any further questions in Adobe Connect. Operator, do we have any questions on the phone?
There are no questions on the phone, but participants, please press star 1 to ask a question.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question to the presenters, please use the questions to presenters pod. There's a lively chat going on, and we very much encourage that, but to ensure that we are not stepping into the conversation, we ask that you submit your questions via the questions to presenters pod so we'll know that that question is actually meant for us.
There are no questions on the phone.
We have a question from Catherine Bauer. In phase 2, will you be testing the whole sample or just the subset that was found to have syntactical errors?
Hi, Catherine. This is Russ Weinstein. For clarification, phase 2, we drew a new sample, a different sample, essentially, from the phase one data that you see here. So we drew a second sample. We took about 150,000 domains for that sample. And again, we're going to use this methodology of a two-step sample where we then select a subsample to analyze, and we'll perform both syntactical checks and the operability checks on that subsample, which again will be about 10,000 domains.
This is Ed Mulroe. One other thing to add is that when we do the operational testing, we are going to test all of the subsample for operational errors. So all of the sample gets tested for syntactical errors, and all of it gets tested for operational errors. It is suspected in talking with the UPU that some addresses that may fail syntactical checks will actually pass operational checks. So that is one of the reasons why we are not just going to test just the syntactical ones that pass and go on to operational. Everything will be tested again for operational.
The next question is from Theo Gertz. In the RAA 2013, the state field may be left empty. However, when you use the criteria of the UPU S42, you would look at the country code and expect a state mentioned if it was expected in the S42. Is that the reason that the state field is missing and is reported as a rather high inaccuracy?
Hi, Theo. This is Russ Weinstein. I think you did a pretty good job of summarizing it there. Yeah, that is how we did the postal address testing. So I think there's a couple optional fields in a postal address under the 2013 REA, and they were only counted as an inaccuracy if they were expected based on the applicable country.
It seems that we have a question that's been posed in the participant chat that looks like it might be for ICANN staff. Apologies if this is not the case. As a reminder, if you'd like to pose a question directly to staff or either of the presenters, please use the questions to presenters pod. That way we know that your question is indeed for us and not for the other members of the chat. The question comes from Aman Masjid. Which databases were used to test accuracy of postal addresses from African and APAC regions?
Hi, Aman. This is Russ Weinstein. The Universal Postal Union, or UPU as we refer to them, conducted all of our postal address testing. They're the publishers of the S42 document that defines all of the postal standards across the world, and we used their expertise to determine the requirements for each country's postal addresses.
The next question comes from Elaine Pruis from Donuts. Please clarify the 30% inaccuracy is on the sample. Has there been any statistical calculation of the 1.75 million total domains? What is the confidence interval for such a statement, if so?
Yes, this is Stephen from NORC. We estimate a 30% inaccuracy rate across the entire GTLD space. This is possible because our sample of 10,000 is representative of the entire GTLD space. We have not created such a confidence interval, but we could in the next draft of the report.
Yeah, this is Russ Weinstein. I have one more thing to tack on to the, some of the questions about inaccuracy. So what we're testing for here is the format of a record, the syntax of the record. So some of these things are minor correction items that may need to take place, and that was what Owen was trying to capture earlier when he talked about some of the tickets that may come out of this from compliance back to the registrars are just format ticket, who is format tickets that'll ask the registrars to make some corrections to the record. Some of them are in fact inaccuracy. That's a case where we have either missing or nonsensical or inadequate data. So I think I don't want to overstate the value of accurate in this context. What we're only checking for at this time was the format of the record, the syntax of the record. So for completeness and format. Thanks.
The next question comes from Theo Gertz. Was that also the case for the phone numbers? If I am correct, the ITU E164 is only about the format and in conjunction with a country code, you can look at the length of the phone number. Again, that is a cross-validation check and not a syntax check.
Hi, Theo. This is Russ. I'm not sure if that's a question or just a statement there. This is one of the tests we defined in order to test the format without. So we're trying to determine if the format is appropriate. And if you think cross-validation is a better term for it, that may be the case. But we considered it one of the format or syntax checks. Thanks.
Theo follows up with, for example, if you had only done the syntax check, would you have a better result score-wise?
Hi, Theo. Again, this is Russ. Not sure. That's not the way we looked at the data, so I'm not sure I can answer that right now.
Rita Tellen from .sky asks, can you confirm how many of the records had privacy details on the contact data? Many thanks.
Hi, Frida. This is Owen. Because there's no formal requirement that a record be identified as a privacy or proxy service, it's impossible to state. Looking at the data, sometimes it is possible to recognize some larger, more familiar ones, but it's not possible to estimate that at this time. They were, however, included in the testing if they were found in the sample.
This is Russ, and as a follow-up to what Owen said, that was one of the items that came up a lot in the discussion in the public comments after the pilot study, and there was feedback on both sides about privacy and proxy should be included, should be excluded, and what we settled on was that we would include them and test them just like any other records, and at a point in time when ICANN and the community have agreed on accreditation and a list of accredited privacy proxy providers and what the requirements are for those providers, we can reconsider whether we continue to include them or not. But at this time, it is a little premature to make any choice of include or exclude. So we just treated them just as any other record, which is the standard they're held to. Thanks.
We're not showing any more questions. We do have some time left in the webinar. We have 12 minutes available. If you'd like to ask a question, please do so through the Questions to Presenters pod in Adobe Connect, or feel free to push star 1 on your phones.
No questions under phone either.
So we're just discussing something in the room, and we expect to get back to you shortly. I think we have another question from Greg DiBiase. Will the percentage of actual complaints sent by compliance versus complaints received from the study be made available?
This is Owen Smigelski. We will be certainly keeping track of those metrics. We did that during the pilot, number of records identified versus the number sent out. And we also track the number that went out as who is inaccuracy complaints, as well as those that went out as who is format complaints, as well as the resolution of those complaints and what the reasons for closure were, et cetera.
Another question from James Liddell. In an ideal world, does this study indicate that 30% of GTLDs meet the definition of inaccurate and should be suspended? Just trying to get to the bottom line.
Hi, James. This is Owen, again, for the record. No, that is not a correct statement. What it means is that in the GTLD space, 30% contain some sort of format issue. Whether or not that renders it inaccurate and non-contactable is a completely different question, and that's something that would be considered in phase two, where there also will be testing to ensure if there's that format error, does that render a telephone number inaccurate? Again, there was no testing to see in then phase one to see if does that email address actually work. It just doesn't match the format. So there could be a large number of these that are format errors not complying with that type of standard, whether which is much different than being inaccurate. And under the 2013 RAA, if it was to go through the who is inaccuracy process, whether it would have to be suspended under the who is accuracy program specification. And that's not anything we can really speculate to now at this time.
Do we have any questions on the phone?
No questions on the phone.
Theo's back again.
Okay. We have another question from Theo Gertz. So from a compliance perspective, how will compliance deal with the fact that certain countries do not follow the S42 format? This would create high amount of incorrect data as no one in the country follows that format.
Hi, Theo. This is Owen. That would be something that compliance would look at on a case-by-case basis. The complaints are going to be processed manually, just as all other complaints, who is inaccuracy and who is format complaints. So that would be something that would be determined at the time that complaint is reviewed. And if there appear to be certain regions or areas that are having some problems, we may be able to reach out either if it's a specific registrar or certain registrars to see if there's a way to improve that overall.
At this time, we don't have any other questions in either the chat or on the phones. Apologies, we just received one from Volker Greiman. But there will be no automatic feed of the results if this study by domain name into compliance, correct?
Hi, Volker. This is Owen. That is correct. The tickets will be created automatically, as in they will come into the system. They won't be manually entered. We're working to have a conversion utility to take the output from the study and convert that into the format required to be created as a ticket in our complaint processing system. However, each ticket will be reviewed manually by staff and determine whether or not it should be processed or not, and it will be something that falls alongside all the other complaints. We're not, and I see your next question, Volker, is so would that be 44 million tickets? No, we're only looking at the output from this study. So from that 10,000 sample that was analyzed, there will only be a subset of those entries identified or domains that have format issues that were identified.
Okay, thank you, everyone. We don't have any additional questions in either the chat or on the phone. With that, we'll go ahead and close the webinar. We appreciate your participation. And as always, if you have further questions, you can contact customersupport@icann.org.
Thank you. And that concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.